time for Newsmakers with Rhett DeHart and Dave Bourne. Presented by Les Schwab Tires. It's live, local talk that matters to you. Now, here's Brent and Dave.
Hello and welcome this fine Willamette Valley day. This is Brent DeHart along with Dave Bourne. We are Newsmakers, your noon hour at KYKN 1430, where we talk about local initiatives, local ideas, institutions, ideas, and individuals. A lot of alliteration there, Dave.
A lot.
Yeah, there we go. But it is our opportunity in our lunch hour to talk about things that affect the Mid-Valley residences, their quality of life, their pocketbooks, all sorts of topics. Some nice and good and great things happening in the community, and some things we're frustrated with in the community, but things that affect Marion, Polk County in general and the state overall sometimes as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
And speaking of the state overall, we got a great guest today. We have to talk about something that's been a huge political battlefield, actually, as long as I've lived in Oregon.
Really?
And that is the public employee unions and the clout that they have. Don't roll your eyes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry.
It's radio, and everybody could tell you rolled your eyes there.
A little loud, was it?
But how much clout do they have in elections?
A lot.
And is it more than they should? And more specifically, should they be collecting money from people who don't want to pay it?
Mm-hmm.
In terms of, do they have to be a union member? And if they are a union member, do they have to contribute to the political goings on and contributions and actions and so forth? Huge court case. We've got Aaron with us when Freedom Works. And that's when I really caught the attention of what was happening immediately. Aaron, you with us?
Yeah, Brent, thanks for having us on. Just to clarify, it's the Freedom Foundation.
Sorry.
Freedom,
Freedom Foundation. Gosh, start off with a major faux pas right off the top of the interview. Freedom Foundation, thank you, Aaron, for being here. I appreciate our calling in and being here willing to talk to us. So the Freedom Foundation, how much did I get that right in the court case and description? I know you we're going to get some more specifics from you.
Yeah, very accurate. I mean, you recognize that government employee unions, they're the number one contributor to politics in our state, and the baseline of the scandal that we see is that they're taking money from your everyday public employee, your everyday teacher, and they're funding their politicians that will agree to go into office. And when they go into office, they receive the union support. They agree to raise taxes on the private sector in order for them to grow government and be able to skim dues from more public employees.
Okay, so I'm seeing a cycle there that the public policy goal of the union representation, and I don't want to throw everybody who works and is represented by a union in the same bucket, but let's just say the union leadership and the representation, the goal is to have more money go to the government so that they can have higher wages and better packages for union workers and to hire more of them. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, it's like any private entity. Your goal is to raise revenue. But when you're a public employee union, the only way that you can raise revenue is by increasing the size of government so that they can then skim more union dues off more people. And that's certainly not to blame public employees. Teachers are heroes in a lot of ways. But when you're a union, their goal is to bloat the size of government so that they can grow their revenue.
Okay, so when we're talking about public employee unions, which union specifically are we covered under this this court case?
Well, every public sector union is covered by the big Janus decision that came down in June. But what we specifically do is we target three of the largest unions and three of the biggest political players in this state, which is the Service Employees International Union, the SEIU. They have most state employee contracts. The Teachers Union, the OEA, and the Oregon AFSCME, which has most county and city contracts.
Wow. Yeah, those are big, powerful those are powerful forces in local governments. I know that, in terms of even getting down to city council races, they get activated.
Yeah, they're the biggest contributor as a group to politicians in this state. I mean, and the media kind of has a blackout on these groups as well, because you look at the last election cycle, they were homed in on Phil Knight's big spending in the governor's race. However, unions spent significantly more money than Phil Knight did.
And it didn't get the press coverage, right?
No, not even close.
Yeah, I didn't hear a word. I did hear about Phil Knight, and who's he supporting, and is this okay for him to support it, and all those things. That's a great point. So let's educate the listener a little bit about how the money moves. Okay, so I'm a janitor, right? And I work at a municipal government, and I'm a member of SEIU, presumably, right?
Cool. Well, if they're in a small public employee, they're probably a member of AFSCME.
Okay.
So, yeah, let's just use them as an example. They will skim approximately 1.7% of that person's paycheck, and they'll take a significant portion of that, and they'll use that on their own political agenda so that they can get politicians elected, so that they can raise taxes on the private sector in order for growing government more. So that's kind of the way that the money flows. If you're everyday public employee now, the janitor, the teacher, whatever it may be, due to the janitor's decision, they can now stop paying union dues entirely, whereas before the law of the land was that they could only opt out of a small portion of those dues.
Okay, so I'm a member. They take 1.7% of my pay to support the union. Is that my dues? And then a portion that is for political activism?
Average. Yeah, yeah.
All right, so I'm going to throw out this number just so people have an opportunity to compare. The contribution that we all make when we're getting our W-2 wages for the Medicare is 1.45%. So when we earn a dollar, 1.45% of that goes to your Medicare. That's how we support Medicare in America. But the union is higher than that for these employees. Their contribution is higher than what they're contributing to Medicare.
Yeah, exactly right. And, you know, the scandal of this is that a lot of public employees actually disagree with the kind of representation that they're receiving. And this is a private business. This is not housed under any kind of public entity. In no other circumstance do you have a private entity that's able to skim from a person's paycheck.
All right, so I work for one of the government entities. Do I have to be a union member?
Not anymore. I mean, previously you could opt out and not be a union member, but you'd still have to pay a significant portion of those dues. So most public employees decided to continue to be union members. But now the law of the land is that they do not have to be a member and they do not have to pay dues if they are not a member.
Wow. And what kind of reaction have you seen on union membership as far as this news? Are we seeing anybody opt out now?
Yeah, so the Janus decision, which is the decision that allowed them to do this, it was kind of what I call the start, because no group is going to tell these people that they can now leave the union, and they certainly aren't going to assist them in doing it because it is a slightly more complex procedure than it should be. So the state doesn't tell them, the union doesn't tell them that we can leave. So we actually outreach to all government employees statewide and let them know that they can leave the union and stop paying union dues. So then on top of that, we assist them with doing that.
You must be getting some pushback in that.
Yeah, so what we've seen in Oregon is since the Janus decision, 8,000 people in Oregon have decided to leave their union through our assistance. It's over 25,000 nationwide. And, you know, these are people that would not have ordinarily been able to exercise these new rights. So we consider this a big win for public employees.
Okay, so for a public employee, it may be a matter of just putting, you know, 1.7% back in their take-home pay, right? And for some, it might be a stance that I don't like how you're spending my money, right? And don't want to be represented. But either way, they're going to have the option now. And that was decided this year in the Supreme Court case, correct?
Yeah, June of this year, the U.S. Supreme Court deemed that unions are inherently political and that you, through your First Amendment rights, you do not have to support an entirely political entity.
Huh, interesting. So I was a member of a union for a pretty good portion of my life, and actually there were times I definitely didn't, and it wasn't particularly a political entity, but I knew that I didn't agree with how they were representing us in the workplace. So it's nice to have some sort of option for union members to exercise a voice. We're going to break here in a minute, but we're talking to Aaron with from Freedom Foundation about the Supreme Court case that happened in June of this year and what effect it is going to have for the coffers of the unions and how they affect public policy in the state now that we have a Democratic supermajority in both houses of Congress here at the State House. So that's going to make a major impact. So we're going to break. We'll be right back on 1430 KYKN, Salem's Listening.
Newsmakers continues with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Welcome back, folks, to Newsmakers. This is Brent DeHart here with Dave Bourne, and we have on the phone with us Aaron Wythe from the Freedom Foundation. Let's back up a little bit, Aaron. You still with us?
Yeah, I am.
Let's back up a little bit and talk about what the Freedom Foundation is, where it got its origins, and your role in the Freedom Foundation. You're the Oregon director, correct?
Sure, yeah. So Freedom Foundation, we started 27 years ago in Washington State primarily, and at that time we were a very traditional think tank, and the way I describe it to people is we did a lot of thinking about stuff. In 2013, we had our new CEO came in, Tom McCabe, and he came in and said that we're going to change our focus to do one thing, and we're going to do it really well, and we're going to fight to remove government unions' influence from politics. So we really changed our dynamics at that time to be more of an action-oriented tank, and that's what has brought us to now our strong litigation presence as well as our big outreach presence to union members. In 2015, we moved into Oregon, which is when I came in, and I'm the Oregon director of the Freedom Foundation and have been for just about a year now, and that's kind of how we got playing in this state. We also moved into California last year as well.
So you're along the West Coast now with a singular focus.
Yeah, exactly right. The analogy Tom uses is be like Boeing, make airplanes, don't try and make bicycles.
Okay. So you describe yourself as an advocacy group, and then you're trying to affect a change to public policy and how the law works as it relates to public employee unions and how they can collect taxes, I mean, not taxes, but dues, and use portions of that dues for political contributions. All right, I get it.
But where that stems from, really, is we had a lot of conservative ideas that we wanted to try and pursue back before Tom came in. But really, with the dynamics of the unions being so entrenched in government, we were not able to have any adequate reform in the areas that we were looking to, which is what prompted us to actually make a change so that then other groups will be able to go in and actually advocate for change that agree with their ideologies.
What other groups are out there similar to yours that you feel aligned with or that might be on the other side that's a similar type of funded and active advocacy group?
You know, there's really nobody like us, and I obviously will beat our own chest in saying that, but nationally, we've been doing this longer than any other group. Nobody has really been doing this before the Janus decision. The only exception to that is National Right to Work Foundation, which they're a legal advocacy group. They really only do legal work. We're the only group in the nation that does what we call opt-out work, informing union members that they can leave their union, and does litigation on top of it. No other group does both of those pieces, and we've had significant results on the West Coast, which is three really hard states to operate in for our organization. And we've had, yeah, like I said, we've had great results. No other groups are having the kind of results that we're having in any other state.
Okay. Would you describe yourself, would you describe Freedom Foundation as a partisan group?
Okay. No, we're out of politics. I mean, our goal is to remove government unions' influence from politics. It's the unions that are going in and kind of making us partisan in a way because they are approaching one group of politicians and having them, they're backing them financially and having them push their agenda through the legislature.
Okay. So how much interaction might you have with either the Republican Party or Republican Party leaders or electeds?
You know, little. Like I said, our fight is really at the grassroots level. So we really don't connect that much with politicians or leaders of conservative-type groups just because what we do is completely different. We do very little legislation because of the dynamics of the Capitol. It's very hard for us to push any legislation that would get passed. The only real legislating that we do is on the defensive end when unions push back bills through the building.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm glad I asked that. So I know how I feel about this. I know the answer to this question. I've said it on the air here with Dave, but I'm going to ask you because I want to hear you say it. And what is wrong with the unions advocating for their political goals? What's wrong with it? Why the pushback from the Freedom Foundation?
There's nothing wrong with any group going and advocating for their political goals, but the issue with government unions is that they're doing it essentially with taxpayer dollars. It's a scheme that they cooked up where they've managed to take dues from these public employees, from teachers. I always use the example of teachers because they're heavily affected by this. They've used a scheme where they've taken dues from these people and they're actually funding politicians with what is taxpayer dollars to go and raise taxes and then on the private sector and then go in and grow the size of government so that they can take more union dues from these people and grow their revenue. The bottom line is every dollar that comes that goes to government unions has come from the taxpayer.
Wow. And then a bunch of... So tell us, if you know, maybe educate us a little bit as far as the union dues. Do they separate, hey, we're going to use this for political advocacy and we're going to do this for administration of the union and collective bargaining? Where's that line?
There is no real line at this point. They do have a voluntary political action committee. So they have a PAC and it is almost entirely voluntary. Some of it is not. Some of it still comes from dues dollars. But there's no line at this point. Since the Abu decision was overturned, which was the decision back in the 70s, that said they must audit themselves and say how much of their budget is political and how much of it goes towards representation. Since the Janus decision overturned that, there is no line for these people. Everything that the Supreme Court deemed that everything a union does, a government union does, is inherently political.
So I'm a union member, and I'm teaching at a local high school, and I want the union to support a conservative candidate or a Republican candidate. What are my chances?
Good luck. little to none. The only way that they will support candidates is if they will agree to go into office and raise taxes and protect PERS, so continue the PERS liability. They won't give money to candidates that won't agree to do those things.
So you don't sound like you're from Oregon, Aaron.
No, I'm not. I'm from England originally, which is a place that I would consider to be a socialist country.
So you're one of those foreigners.
I am one of those.
Came to the States to live off the dole. I can't believe it. We're talking to Aaron with. Well, am I saying their last name correctly? With.
Yeah, Aaron with. Yeah.
Nice English name from the Freedom Foundation. Huge news. I mean, how long has this court case been being contested? How long did it take to get to the Supreme Court?
Well, really over 40 years. But wow. We had a case in the Supreme Court in 2015. It was Friedrichs versus California Teachers Association. And with the untimely death of Justice Scalia, that decision was a split decision at that time. And then when we saw a new judge come into the Supreme Court, that's when we got the 5-4 decision, which granted right to work to be the law of the land.
All right. Explain right to work.
So what right to work means is you have the right to work for a government entity and not pay union dues. Previously, that was not the law of the land, nationwide anyway. It was the case in 28 states, but not the 22, including Oregon, Washington, and California. Previously, the law of the land was that if you were a government employee and you were not in management, then you had to pay union dues.
Okay. There's a bit of a disconnect here, and I'm cycling back to what you said about all the money that's being used, that's being for political action and political activity, is coming from the taxpayer dollar. Yet I know that if you talk to somebody who works for the local government, the county government, and so forth, they cannot advocate for things that are political. especially that have to do with the municipality, have to do with the county, they have to be silent other than providing data or information. They can't even be advocates for their own bond measures like a police facility or a fire bond or any of those things. They can't be political actives because they work for the government. And yet government dollars are flowing through with a forest dues to, in effect, do the same thing. Did I get that wrong? Is that a disconnect?
No, yeah, you're totally right. It's essentially a scheme that they've managed to cook up. I mean, you cannot name another instance where taxpayer dollars are going to fund political activity, yet that's what we're seeing from government unions. They're funneling this money through government employees in order to grow their revenue.
How much impact do you expect it to have on the coffers of money that's flowing through the unions and into the politicians' hands?
Significant. I mean, from the day of the Janus decision, there were 12% of all government employees that were non-members to the union, but they were still forced to pay dues. They all stopped paying union dues the day after Janus. So that's 12% in revenue, annual revenue, that they just lost that day. And with our comprehensive campaign, I expect to see 25 to 30% losses in the next 6 to 8 months. My policy analyst told me this morning that he got records requests back from the state that approximately 50% of union members in the Department of Agriculture and the Department of Fish and Wildlife are now non-dues-paying people.
50%?
Yeah, so we're seeing significant declines in union membership, specifically at the state levels and state entities.
Oh, wow. We're going to get right back to that. Can you hold on for another segment here, Aaron?
Yeah, please.
All right, you're listening to Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening. We'll be right back.
This is Newsmakers with Brent and Dave on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Wow, Brent, such good information here.
Unbelievable. The staggering statistic coming out of the last segment. We're talking to Aaron with the Freedom Foundation about the court case, a Supreme Court case that allows a union member to opt out and giving them, in fact, the legal right to work without being forced to be a member of a union. And it's interesting. I mean, there's a lot of things that are interesting about unions. One is that some states prohibit some classes like a teacher's from being a member of a union, and Oregon requires them to have a union representing.
Required?
Them. Yeah, I believe so. I believe I had that right. That's what I was told. Welcome back, Aaron. You were still with us?
Yeah, thanks for having me
that
on.
And number floored us.
You are right. Oregon is a place where if you're a public employee, you do have to be represented by a union. It's a part of your contract that you have to be represented by the union's contract, and you cannot go and bargain for your own contract.
Wow. Interesting. All right. And it's not that way in other states. I mean, sometimes if you're an Oregonian and you've been here a long time, you just assume, well, this is the way it's done, and it's not done like this in all of the states.
So you're basically being forced to use their representation.
Collective bargaining.
Yeah,
exactly right. And that's one of the next steps that we will try and create reform in. I think we're a ways away from doing it. But, I mean, it's just like most jobs in the private sector where you negotiate your own contract with your boss, you negotiate your own wage, your own benefits and all that kind of stuff. Public employees do not have the ability to do that.
All right. When we're talking about public employees, and Aaron mentioned it a little bit earlier, we're talking about people that are non-management employees that work for a government entity that could be the city, county, could be the school district, and could be the state of Oregon. So it could be the guy driving the snowplow for ODOT, right? What about police and fire? Those unions as well?
Yeah, it does include them, but I will give a disclaimer. You know, police unions, in my opinion, most of them, I'll be broad, I hate speaking in generalities, but I'll be broad about this. Most police unions are set up the way we'd like to see most unions set up. And what I mean by that is they take union dues from their employees, but they actually use those dues to go back to benefits for them. You know, I've heard of different stories from police officers where a new police officer, he couldn't afford the deductible for his health insurance when he was injured on the job. The union actually covered that for him. So they're taking dues from these people, but they're spending it back on them and not in politics. That's how we'd like to see unions set up, where they take dues from people but spend it back on their membership.
Oh, that's a great distinction. Do you find that generally be true, more true of police in terms of less political activism in police and fire?
Yeah, the only place that we really see the police union play in politics is when there's a police officer running for office or whether it is a local bond that affects the police department directly.
But going back to who is subject to being a member of the union, I mean, I don't think people even think about it. If they go pay their taxes to Department of Revenue, there's a clerk there, and they're probably a member of union, right? And
yeah.
You mentioned teachers, which is very visible for most citizens. They can think in that regard because the school district is a government entity. And also numerous people, any number of people that might work for the city or the county that they may interact with. So, like, you know, it could be if they're not a volunteer, the staff, anybody showing you around the Capitol might be a union member and so forth. City, state, government, school district, all of those governments, right? Anybody who's not in management. All right, so let's go back to that staggering number. So you're talking about Department of Ag and Fish and Wildlife as far as the number of people who are opting out, who no longer want to contribute to the union. I think you said 50%.
Yeah, one of them was a 49, one of the 53. I don't remember which was which, but yeah, it was around 50% of these public entities that have opted out of their union and are not paying union dues after Janus.
So
at least that's what the state numbers tell us.
And what is that a surprise to you? And what do you attribute that particular grouping for with?
You know, I was actually slightly surprised. Like I said, I anticipated seeing about 25 to 30% around 12 months after Janus. What do I attribute it to? I mean, most of these opt-outs came from our campaign, and this is a full comprehensive campaign. We're mailing, emailing these guys. We're running billboards, social media ads, TV ads. We're going to their offices. We're going to their homes to tell them that they can leave their union. So I attribute a significant portion of that to our outreach effort.
So when you're doing the outreach and you're reaching out to union members, you must get some feedback from people to tell you where to go, and they're not happy about your message and they're not happy about your activism. Is that the case?
Sure. And for those people, our message isn't for them. If you're happy with your union and you want to belong to the union, you have a right to do that. And we believe in that right. But we also believe that people have the right to not do that if they choose to.
Okay. Where does Freedom Foundation get its resources?
You know, we're funded by Oregon individuals and Oregon businesses that support what we do in our mission. So we're a 501c3 nonprofit. So all donations to us are tax exempt and non-disclosable. We never disclose any of our donors.
Okay, so donors, companies and individuals in Oregon.
Yeah.
And then in Washington, different funders. Do you separate it, segment it by state?
We do, yeah. Our resources go into our individual states where we raise the money, and then we also have some national grants that go to cover our overhead as well.
Okay, so right now there's a listener saying 501c3, I think in terms of you know, nonprofits that are protecting kids or, you know, raise money for the poor or things like that, is a 501c3, how is that applicable to an advocacy organization?
Well, when they make tax distinctions in our kind of field, they often do it by political affiliation. But as I mentioned, we do not have a political affiliation. We do not support or endorse any kind of candidates, ballot initiatives, or anything like that. Our fight is at the grassroots level. We outreach to union members and tell them that they can leave their union if they desire. And we also have a litigation team that's dedicated to supporting the rights of workers when they're being suppressed by unions.
Okay, litigation team. So are those people who are working pro bono or hired by, or at least compensated by Freedom Foundation?
They work for us. We have 7 in-house attorneys, and they're dedicated to representing workers when it comes to disputes versus their union. We have over 30 lawsuits in the free states that we're operating in currently, most of those against unions and some of them against other public entities.
Wow, 30 lawsuits. So how big is your Oregon organization?
We have 7 full-time employees in Oregon, and then we have a team of part-time canvassers that go to the doors and offices of these public employees.
Wow.
Yeah. And is there a timeline in terms of getting, now that you had the court case, and getting a timeline to reach everybody that you want to reach? Is this something that's going to have a bell curve and you would have accomplished the mission and it'll scale down somewhat?
Good question. Hard to tell from now. Our goal is to obviously inform all of these public employees. The best way to do that is through a face-to-face conversation. Our targeted government employees, there's around 160,000 of those. And to deliver messages to those at a high level, it's a long and expensive campaign. So I anticipate we'll be doing this kind of work for the foreseeable future.
Okay.
Are you finding some of the workers or the unions fighting back, trying to suppress your message?
Yes, certainly. And you'll see a lot of that in January of this year when they get into legislative session. We have various bills that we know are on the union's agenda to get pushed through the legislature. They're going to be aimed at us to attack us and prevent us from having the ability to do what we've been successful at doing so far. So there's certainly pushback. They file frivolous lawsuits against us as well as the ones that we file against them. So we're certainly in battles in various different ways.
So, Aaron, is it fair to say that you and I have probably communicated maybe a grand total of 30 seconds prior to today's interview?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we had a couple of emails off each other.
So I want to chime in here, and before the hour's out, I want to talk about the lawsuits you're referencing. But here's my beef, and I'll jump in here because we didn't even discuss this topic, Dave, with Aaron. He doesn't even know how I feel about it, I don't think. But we've discussed it. My beef is that public policy in Oregon should not be driven by the agenda of union leaders, of public union leaders. Let me rephrase that. So that when we have all of our electeds of our one party, you know, majority party, super majority party, all in a certain way beholden to the people that wrote the checks and walked door for door and canvassed and all these things. So you have the union activism doing this. They're beholden to them. And the fear is in public policy for me that the policy of the state and the legislature will merge to be identical to the public employee unions. And I don't think that's what should drive our public policy in Oregon. I think
it's supposed to be for the public.
Broader than that, it needs to be everybody from the environmental activists to the business community to the transportation activists, the whole nine yards. But it can't just be, well, we're going to push the agenda that makes our union members the happiest. So I think there's a huge problem in Oregon. Mm-hmm. Apparently, the Freedom Foundation does as well. So that's a big concern. You just don't want to, even if you're a Democrat, say you're a Democrat and you like your Democratic representative, you don't necessarily want them to be in the pockets of a public employee union.
No.
You have to make a pretty pragmatic decision in terms of where do we have to go with this budget? What is practical? And should we be raising taxes? Should we not be raising taxes to get to the goal of the public employees union?
Right.
Is that fair, Aaron?
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. I mean, when you've got any politicians in any circumstance that are really in the pocket of the people that are funding them, it's a bad thing. But in Oregon, the majority, in fact, the supermajority of people in the Capitol have their campaigns significantly funded by government unions. And they will not fund these people if they don't agree to go and raise taxes on the private sector and grow the size of government. They just won't do it. So it's a massive issue. That we're having in Oregon right now.
Do you have any statistics on that off the top of your head as far as how much money is rolling in and what percentage of these campaigns are getting funded?
You know, we're analyzing it right now. We did it for 2016 and it took a couple of months. I mean, there's so much money that's being funneled here. It was around $25 million that came in 2016 from government unions. I think we'll actually see a decline once it's all said and done this year in their spending. Mainly because we've been outreaching over previous years to union members, primarily a population of in-home care providers, which have had right-to-work protection since 2014, actually. So we've seen membership slide from that population, which has affected their revenue. But they just re-strategized this year, and they spent money in legislative races rather than ballot initiatives, which was their main agenda in 2016.
Interesting. Well, I'm going to be interested in hearing more from the Freedom Foundation as you fight the good fight. I believe in what you're saying. Actually, we follow Rush Limbaugh on this program, so we have a carryover of a fairly conservative audience, and I don't know how many Democrats are with us this lunch hour, but the question I would pose to them is, if you believe in the public policy of the Democratic Party, vote for the Democratic Party, but I'm still going to ask, do you think that public party person should have gotten there obligated to support a public union goal?
No.
So that's the same problem we talked about Brad Avakian yesterday, the labor commissioner, because sometimes it feels like he wants everyone to work for a public union and get paid by a public union. Everybody should be a member of a union and not just any, but also for the government. It's a little hard to fund that if everybody works for the government. All right, Aaron, we got about another minute. No, half a minute. Nope, we're going to have to break, but we're going to come back. And I want you to talk about lawsuits that you're facing, lawsuits that you are fending off, lawsuits that you have filed. You're listening to Aaron Wythe with the Freedom Foundation, our guest today on Newsmakers 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Newsmakers continues with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
And welcome back, folks. One more segment with Aaron Wythe of the Freedom Foundation. This is Brent DeHart along with Dave Bourne on KYKN. Aaron, I appreciate you taking the whole hour with us. And I hope I've asked the questions that the listener wants to get the answers to. And I hope we've given you an opportunity to say what you want to say and communicate. First, I should say congratulations. And I know you say the lawsuit and the Supreme Court decision is 40 years in the making, but it must be a very exciting year to see everyone have the right to opt out of being a member. They have a right to work without paying the unions. That must be exciting. It must have been a fair bit of celebrations in the Freedom Foundation offices, yes?
Yeah, it's an amazing time to be involved in this movement. But I will say it means a lot of work for us, which is a really good thing in this industry, because if you're not working, then you're dying. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's a really good time to be doing what we're doing, and we're just having success after success, which is obviously what it's all about in the nonprofit world.
So you're getting lawsuits, and you're filing lawsuits. Dave was mentioning that last period, and you anticipate more fights at the Capitol as they go into session. So what do you have to battle back, and what are your odds? Tell us a little bit about more recent lawsuits.
So we filed, in the past 3 months, we filed 2 federal class action lawsuits to represent union people. And one of them was for those 12% of people that were not paying dues before the Janus decision that I mentioned, they want their dues back that were taken from them before Janus. So we filed a class action to try and get those dues back for either 2 or 6 years. One is our federal claims, one of them are our state claims. We believe we'll be successful in our federal claims of getting 2 years back for these people. We expect to be in the U.S. Supreme Court. We'll lose in federal court initially, likely. We'll certainly lose in the Ninth Circuit, and then we'll appeal and hopefully be in front of the U.S. Supreme Court. So that's a really cool issue, and it'll put those dues back in the pockets of workers that objected to them from day one.
And you said you're really just trying to reach back 2 years to reclaim those dues.
Yeah, I mean, we have 2 claims. Our state claims are 6 years. We're not sure whether we're going to get those claims accepted, but we believe we'll get our federal claims accepted of 2 years.
That seems to be a lot of money and a lot of time. That's a yeoman's job.
It's 12% of their revenue for the past 2 years.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a lot.
So if this goes back to the deep pockets, and we run against this sometimes when there's advocacy and we think, oh, the unions won't like this, and we cannot fight their deep pockets, you know, as far as a ballot measure sometimes, as far as a candidate sometimes, but often it's a ballot measure that we know that the coffers are deep in terms of they're going to be able to fund a campaign against you. And now they have a supermajority of people who are elected in the Capitol who are potentially against you, or potentially they are beholden to the unions. What do you do?
You know, in the Capitol, there's not much you can do. I mean, we have a strategy for fighting the bills that come in, but the bottom line is when you pay the campaigns of the people that are in there, you can pretty much pass what you want, and that includes taxes now that they have a supermajority. So we expect it to be a really tough session. We do have a strategy for finding some of those bills that are going to be aimed at us. I can't really talk about it on the air right now, because it is theoretical at this time, but some of it is a litigation strategy to fight the bills that they're going to introduce. Some of them, we believe, are going to be illegal based on federal law.
Wow. Really? Our state representatives, state senators don't know what's legal based on the U.S. law?
Yeah, it's amazing. But when the unions are paying for your campaigns, you'll do pretty much whatever they tell you to do.
That sounds a wee bit cynical. So, and I'm being a little bit facetious as well, it might be, but yeah.
Well, let's catch up during the session, and we'll see how cynical you are.
Okay. All right. What about the state of Washington, state of California? Just reach out a little bit while we have a little time. Any grass roots gains in California for this effort?
Yeah, I mean, we've only been in California for about 12 months now, and it's we have 160,000 public employees that are we're targeting to outreach to, and 1.2 million. So it's a huge state to go down there and tackle. But of course, we have a litigation strategy as well, which we believe we'll be able to have a lot of success in initially. In Washington State, they've been on this, as I mentioned, from 2013. So they've made significant waves over there as well. So we've had success in all three states, but California is just a few years behind.
Okay. Well, going back to Oregon and the workers in Marion and Polk County here, because that's kind of our reach and our focus here. The people who are union members potentially are going to put 1.7% of their paycheck back in their pocket, right? So that's an economic impact in our area. That's a raise for a public employee union. A lot of times, and I know, especially when the budgets were tight, they weren't even getting raises. They got no raises, and everyone's fighting after the PERS and so on and so forth. They'd get 1% raise, they'd go without a raise. They don't get huge raises. Like sometimes we, you know, if you have a successful private enterprise, your wages might rise higher. But they're looking at 1% or 2% raises per year, cost of living maybe. But now they can get 1.7.
Almost 2%, yeah.
Yeah, just like that, right?
Yeah, just by opting out, I'd encourage any public employee listening to visit our website, optouttoday.com. All the information you could need to opt out is on there. And if you do have additional questions, there's a phone line to call in and gather more information as well.
All right, let's plug that because we're down to our last minute. So optoutwork.com.
Optouttoday.com.
Oh, optouttoday.com. It's a website of the Freedom Foundation. Okay, we spent the last hour talking to Aaron Wythe of the Freedom Foundation. He's the Oregon director. Supreme Court case against June handed down saying that people cannot be forced to contribute to their union. They have a right to work and opt out of what you would call capturing some of their wages to further a political agenda. So optouttoday.com is the website, and there's a phone number if they need some help. If they're afraid, do you have people who are afraid of retribution in the workplace?
We do, yeah, but I tell those people, you're in good company. Thousands of people have opted out in Oregon. And for any of those that are worried about retaliation from the union, we have 7 attorneys dedicated to representing the rights of workers.
Good to know. You're there for them. Thanks for being here. We appreciate it. Have a great weekend. This is Brent DeHart along with Dave Bourne. You've been listening to Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN, Salem's Listening.
This has been Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.